Hello, everyone. I'm Laura Cornell, Divine Feminine Yoga, and I am really, really happy to be here today with Amy Weintraub for our Yoga Teacher Success interview. And Amy and I have just had a nice little conversation here getting ready, and I'm just so excited to be with Amy. We've been talking about chutzpah and passion and what it takes to really be willing to step out in a big way. And so I'm going to read you a little bit of Amy's bio from her website, which is yogafordepression.com. yogafordepression.com. Amy Weintraub is a specialist in yoga for depression. She's the author of two books, Yoga for Depression, and a new book that's coming out this March 2012, called Yoga Skills for Therapists. She's the founding director of the Life Force Yoga Healing Institute, and she offers advanced professional certification for both mental health and yoga professionals. And it's called Life Force Yoga for Depression and Anxiety. She has a very full calendar of traveling around. She speaks at conferences internationally. She's involved also in ongoing research on the effects of yoga on mood. She has a CD series, and she has a DVD home yoga practice series for mood management. And she has, the title of it is Life Force Yoga to Beat the Blues, Level 1 and 2, and this is award-winning. And she also has a great email newsletter, which comes out twice a month, and she puts current research, news, and media reviews on yoga and mental health. And I know how great this is because I've been receiving her emails, and I look to them for interesting research. So, Amy, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure. It's fun to talk to you again, Laura.
Yep, we met at a yoga teacher conference at Kripalu Center. I think it was might have been 5 years ago. Amy hung out a little
bit.
So I'd like to talk about maybe what it was like for you at the beginning and how you got started as a yoga teacher and how you found your specialization, your niche of yoga for depression.
Well, at the beginning, I had been meditating for many years, but I didn't really have an embodied practice. And when I began an embodied practice, it was actually at Kripalu, when I was doing pranayama and along with asana, in a Kripalu yoga class, and then came home and started and became really passionate about practicing and felt the effects of my mood elevating. Within a few months, I was really feeling so much better practicing daily. At that time, I had audio tapes that I took home from Kripalu because there were no yoga teachers in Newport, Rhode Island, where I lived. And just loved the practice and became really passionate about it. And it was responsible for helping me, after years of being on antidepressants, begin to slowly withdraw from antidepressants. So because it meant so much to me, I was so grateful for how the practice had changed my life. I wanted to become a yoga teacher. And at first, like so many people I've talked to, and probably many of the people that are in your course, I was doing the yoga teacher training really for my own depth of knowledge, for my own practice, because I wanted to immerse myself in yoga for a month, because my first training was a month long at Kripalu. And I did it for my own benefit. And by the time I was finished with that first month-long training, I just was so passionate about how yoga had changed my life that I really wanted to share it. I just couldn't feel, I couldn't not teach, because it felt like I owed it to others to share what had made such a huge difference in my life. So it was kind of this sort of gratitude, this paying back. I really needed to do that. So I wasn't teaching yoga for depression classes. I was teaching Kripalu yoga classes back then. That was in the early 90s, 1992. And I was in Newport, Rhode Island, and just rented church spaces and art galleries. And I had like three or four classes in different locations. I didn't have a studio. And I just loved it, and I developed a following of folks, and people expressed to me that they.
Amy, did you have another job at that time, or did you start out as a full-time yoga teacher?
I was in the unique position of having sold a business. I owned in Newport, which was a bed and breakfast inn and a small private nursing home. So I think I still owned one of them at the time, and I guess I still own the inn and that I had with a partner. And so it was not the source of my income, my primary source, and I would not have been able to support myself on the three or four classes that I had going in the community. And, you know, I also taught at the Y and the Newport Athletic Club. So that was not, it was really the source of, and I was a writer, so I'd get, but even my writing was not at the source of my full, but it didn't support me. So it wasn't until I united really my two passions, writing, which I'd written 7 unpublished novels. So I had been banging my head, you know, that's, you talk about depression, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, banging my head against the wall, the New York publishing wall, and being told no, no, no. And I had a lot of short stories that had won national awards, but my novels, I just were not published. And so it was when I united my two passions, writing and yoga, that my world changed.
I love that.
In terms of being able to support myself. I mean, yoga, my world changed when I started practicing yoga first, but it didn't help me support myself. I had other means of income. And then when I unified the writing and the yoga is when the world really changed in terms of my financial situation. I was able to support myself through yoga. Because the writing created a platform for me that just simply teaching yoga in the local community had not. And I wrote for articles for Yoga Journal. The first article on yoga and depression was that I wrote in 1999. It was the first article that Yoga Journal did on yoga and depression. And I wrote that article. It was a feature article, and that was sort of a platform. I started then. I had been teaching at Kripalu. Evening programs and R&R workshops at that point. And once I started writing about yoga and depression and talking about my own depression, and I started developing courses and classes that were specific to mood, how yoga could manage mood. And I started doing research and both in terms of a survey of what research was available at the time, and then also
Can I just pause you for a sec, Amy?
Mm-hmm. Of course.
This is wonderful. Mm-hmm. I love what you're sharing and how you're getting started and how bringing together your long love of writing with your love of yoga. And this is what I find is when we can really combine our best gifts into something. It doesn't have to be writing for everyone. Whatever your best gifts are, when you really put them all together, that's when things can take off. The question I have for you is something you just said, and then I will go on, about you started to tell people about your depression. I just want to kind of open up this point a little bit, because sometimes some of my clients or students will say that they've had a difficult experience in their life, and even when they've overcome it, they're a little shy to talk about it. So how did you know when it was okay to tell people about your depression?
Good question. I'm not really sure. It was when I started writing about it, it just naturally emerged. I know that there was a lot of shame about certain aspects of my childhood, certain parts of my childhood that I really never even talked about in therapy for many years. Until I was in my 30s. And then once I began talking about it, the shame associated with the stories that I was finally telling disappeared, and then it just became a story. There was no longer the emotional attachment. So I think it's just years of yoga practice and self-inquiry and psychotherapy. Not that I'm in psychotherapy now, but I have, there have been times on and off throughout my life, even as a yoga teacher and a yoga professional and someone who's written a book on yoga for depression, where I have taken advantage of, you know, cognizing, understanding what's really going on in my life and doing some psychotherapy along with my yoga practice. So it's years of just really self-inquiry where so that I was comfortable about, and also felt, and when I wrote the book Yoga for Depression, and that was in 2000, I was writing it in 2003, I really felt that my history of depression was like a gift to me at that point. It was a gift. I would not have been, I wouldn't have written a book called Yoga for Depression that sort of was the first of its kind, and if I hadn't gone through my own suffering. And I could also look at all aspects of my life that had caused me pain at the moment as the sort of the wounds, as Rumi would say, through which the light shines through. I would not have been the kind of teacher I was. I wouldn't have the compassion I have for people who are suffering from mood disorders had I not suffered myself. And to be able to talk about it, I think was I think how I actually started talking about it, I think it was just when I began to see my journey as a gift to me and a gift to others, because if I could speak about it and talk about it and teach ways in which people could find who they were beneath the story, beneath the shame, who they really were, as so much more than whatever the story is that they've been telling themselves about their life or or about the world. And because yoga gave me and my students access to that greater picture of who we really are beneath the mood, I was able to talk about those stories as just stories. It's just a story. It's just what happened to me. And it's a way in which I'm able to serve others at this point. So at this point in my life, it's a gift.
I love that. I love that. It's a way you're able to serve others. It's beautiful. That's beautiful. Great.
Thanks.
So that's very helpful. Thank you for kind of opening that up. And let's go on. I think you are starting to talk about how you developed the workshop or moved into the book, your first book.
Yes. It's like, what am I passionate about? And I think the two elements I think that any of us as yoga teachers, yoga professionals need to keep in mind in terms of what we want to offer the world and what our, quote, niche is, what am I passionate about and what am I grateful for? And I was so grateful for my own recovery that became the source of the development of my initial workshops, which were not for yoga teachers and mental health professionals at that point, but just yoga for mood. And And I was asked to, I was, let's see, I guess I, after I wrote the article for Yoga Journal, the it was a cover feature article, people were saying to me, you should write a book. And I said, oh, no, because I was saying, no, you know, that's a cop-out. I need to stay with my fiction, you know, and beat my head against the wall. And, you know, it's too easy to just write about this. It was too easy. I mean, I was telling myself. I would still have
that.
This.
Wow.
This, yeah. Too
because
easy
to
write
to be
a book
hard,
about.
And if they're not hard, something's wrong.
Right. So then I just, at a certain point, I did decide to write a book about it. So I did a book proposal, and it's actually, you know, that book proposal might be helpful for anyone who wants to write anything about yoga. That book proposal is in Bulletproof Book Proposals by Writer's Digest Books. Apparently, my book proposal was so well received that I was contacted. Yeah, I was contacted by Writer's Digest Books to have it included in as an example of a good book proposal. So it's in the Bulletproof Book Proposals, and they did a little interview with me and my agent and my editor. So I put together a book proposal and took it to agents, and to tell you the truth, I didn't have any trouble. When I had agents in New York for my fiction, and it was really hard, you know, people don't make a whole lot of money writing fiction, the agents don't make a whole lot of money, so they treat you very differently. You rarely hear from them, and then you get a slew of rejection letters, you know, whereas writing a book that that was about my passion for yoga, I was really, it was a completely different experience, and I had a lot of people interested in publishing the book, because there hadn't been a book like that before. So it was a fairly easy journey for me. I would say it's not as easy for folks now, because there's a lot more books that have been written in the area of yoga and mental health, but also just yoga books in general. So it's a little harder. Yeah. But don't give up. If you are a writer and you want to write a book about that you're passionate about, whether or not it has a major publisher, and I have to say that in some ways, publishing yourself can be actually more lucrative, because once you've paid for the costs of publication and printing and promotion, then everything that you earn from that book is yours. Whereas with Yoga for Depression, you know, I'm working against an advance, and I maybe get, I don't even know what it is, maybe a dollar a book or something. Not very much money. Whereas if you self-publish, you do get have the opportunity to make more money once you pay off your bills for and a lot of people like a lot of very well-known yoga teachers who are nationally known have published their own books.
An ashram will publish a book, which is like self-publishing. A yoga ashram might publish, become their own publisher and just self-publish.
Mm-hmm.
So then when you did your DVDs, did you self-publish those?
I did. And, you know, so the distribution is basically small. I mean, it's wherever I teach, you know, I teach all over. So people, like I just came back this weekend from teaching in Asheville, North Carolina, and they order the DVDs and the CDs. So they get sold there. And then through my website and at Kripalu and other places where I teach. But I've never really even sought national distribution. I'm kind of not that savvy about it. If I had a business manager, I probably would. So that's a weakness I have. Actually, my background initially, coming out of college, I was a television producer and writer. And I actually did pretty well, but I was a depressed workaholic, just, you don't want to know what my lifestyle was like. I was a television producer, so I love creating, you know. And I mean, I was a television producer so long ago that we were working with film. There wasn't even videotape out yet.
Right.
I was doing film documentaries. So anyway, the level one and level two DVDs was really fun for me to get out there and produce again and to write the script and work with I found a fabulous award-winning cinematographer and editor. So it was really fun. Again, it was like uniting my passions. Fun to create, doing that, and we had a ball doing it, and I mean, it's not that it's not work, but it was fun work. I mean, pretty much everything I do is fun work, except like sitting in front of the computer too long. But most everything I do is fun work. And the same with the audio CDs. I mean, I did audio CDs, and those are a lot easier now. I go into a studio when I record one because I just want it to be good. But, you know, and I'm so low tech, I'm not very adept at doing things for myself. So, you know, I'll pay someone who knows what they're doing to do the production. And but I know lots of people who are much more technologically inclined than I am, including Richard Miller, makes his audio tapes in bed. I mean, you know, there's so much good technology now that you can use to record your own audio tapes. Tapes. I'm like in the last century.
MP3s
Whatever. So you can. Uh-huh. There's so much that you can do yourself. And I think having if you're really passionate about something. Some aspect, like my friend Karen Clark, who has very good reason to be passionate about helping people with MS, and she does an excellent MS training for yoga teachers working with MS, and she's got two CDs out, audio. Practices for that are gentle yoga, and she did them herself. And I don't think she has a book out, but she does have a manual. She's doing a training for yoga teachers who want to work with MS people. So, and she has a real reason for caring about that, you know, a personal reason. And so I think we take our personal reasons and things that we may have hidden in the past, whether it's a chronic illness or a mood state or a history of trauma or a history of addiction. We take those things that have been the source of our pain and suffering, and when we have practiced enough yoga, they are no longer the source of our pain and suffering. They're simply ways of being that we've moved through. And they give us good information. They give us a reason to be out there in the world serving others. I know of a lot of people, yoga teachers, who had issues with addiction, drugs, alcohol, sex, who have moved through those addictive patterns through their yoga practice and other forms of support. And then are really compassionate and know the territory and are excellent teachers in that arena of yoga and addiction. So you know, mine your own life history for those places where you have suffered and allow yoga to support you through those places. Allow yoga, the light of yoga, to shine through those places so that you know you are so much more than that story, so that you know that you're so much more than that constriction that has limited you in the past. And when you get to that place where you can use your yoga to clear more space so that you are really knowing who you are, beneath whatever mood is present, beneath whatever story about yourself, whatever beneath whatever limitations you're telling yourself you have, or constrictions, when you can know who you really are through your yoga practice, that you're whole and complete, when you know that, then you can use those areas of weakness to that, or perceived weakness, to be the platform from which you teach and share.
Beautiful.
And
beautifully said. I love how you articulate that, Amy. It's really true. Absolutely.
Thank you.
What you're saying. Yeah. It's so true, and you're taking us to a very deep place. I have a few kind of tiny small questions about some of the things you've been saying, and then I want to talk about how things grew for you. One small question is, you talked about how you got the book contract, and I'd be curious how you went about getting the article in Yoga Journal. Did that come to you? Did you seek that, and what was the process? And then if teachers were trying to decide about maybe making a DVD or a CD or thinking about publishing, which might you recommend first? And maybe one piece of that would be the cost. How hard was it for you to make back the costs that when you on your DVD or your CD? So those are kind of two practical questions.
Mm-hmm.
The contract for the...
Okay, the contract for the book was easy, but I was very lucky. I had been known as a writer and editor, and I edited Stephen Cope's first book, Yoga and the Quest for the True Self. I edited his second as well, but I was instrumental in working with him and did a lot of developmental editing, not line editing, but content editing of that book. And he was... his book came out in, 99. Yeah, then 99. And Yoga Journal approached him and asked him to write an article on yoga and depression. And he said, I'm too busy, but Amy Weintraub would be a great one to do it.
Got it. So it was a networking and where you'd been involved. Yeah.
So that was the first article I wrote for Yoga Journal. What I would suggest I was lucky.
Possibly not lucky, Amy. Possibly you were radiating the Lakshmi energy. You were being in the flow of service, and it came to you as a result.
Yeah, maybe. I certainly had been, Stephen Cope knew me as a writer and as an editor, and so we worked together very closely on his first two books, and so he knew that I could write the article for them, and they didn't know me at that point. So that really worked well. And then after that, it was pretty easy. Then I could write for Yoga International and other places. But what I found is that there are so many yoga magazines now, Yoga Chicago, LA Yoga. I guess the Bay Area has one. I don't know it, but
Common Ground.
Maybe it doesn't.
There's one in Philadelphia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's many, many yoga magazines out there. Plus, there's Awareness Magazine. There's a ton of magazines that are amenable to yoga material that are not specifically yoga magazines. So I would say start with a query to one of those, and they may not pay. Some of the like LA Yoga, I don't think pay. I don't know. Maybe they do. But they may not pay. But it's a way of getting you're building up your sort of resume of articles. So if you're not known to Yoga Journal, you can't start and write an article for Yoga Journal. I mean, it's not likely to happen. But you could start with your regional yoga newsletter, do the best job you can, and then you have an example of your writing that you can show to a larger magazine. and then you, and when you query them with an article idea, and then you have an example, then you get something in a little larger magazine, and you just build that way.
Great. Thanks. Yeah.
And then your second question, practicality of how long did it take for the DVD or the CD to pay for itself? I'm sort of laughing because I'm not a really good business person. Everything goes into the same pot. So if I teach at Kripalu, my payment goes into the same pot. The DVD income goes into the same pot. I haven't broken it out. I mean, actually, maybe my assistant could do that for me, but I haven't. I never stopped to look to see, okay, whew, we paid off the $1,000 that it took that we paid CD Baby to produce, or whatever, disc makers to. Yeah, I know. Actually, I have to say, let's see, it's probably each CD, and you can do this a lot cheaper than I did it. I was not looking for doing it cheap. I was looking for doing it well. I probably spent maybe on the production side about, plus buying rights to music, maybe $1,200 to $1,500 for each CD for the production side. And then another $1,000 at least, maybe more than that. Geez, I can't remember. You could check disc makers, but that's who duplicated my, and I would get 1,000 CDs from disc makers. My assistant would know right off the top of her head how much it cost, but I don't know. But so I would say at least $3,000 a CD for the what I did. And I think you can do it a lot cheaper than that. I would say we reordered. This is when before people could just download to their iPods and computers and such. But we would reorder. That first CD was Breathe to Beat the Blues, and every 6 months we were reordering 1,000 CDs.
Cool.
I think within a year it paid for itself. But I had an active website that people were going to because they would do a search for whether they were going to me because of the book or they just wanted information about yoga and depression. They'd find me at the website and then they'd find the CD as well as the book. And then I love doing the DVDs and the CDs because there's so much more I want to share. But in a way, I have too many because they compete with each other. Somebody comes to a workshop, they're not going to buy 4 CDs and 2 DVDs and 2 books. They're going to buy. You're going to pick one thing. So, and they come up to me and say, what's the one thing I should get? Or maybe what's the one or two things I should get? So I just love producing things, and I would love to do another DVD that is just really basically yoga for anxiety. And I know, it's just going to be, it's almost silly to produce another product because it's just going to compete with what I've already got out there.
Interesting. Do you want to talk a little bit, Amy, about the process of transforming and growing? Because you talk about starting with 3 or 4 yoga classes in one town. I know now you're in a different city or in Tucson. What was it like for you? Because in my experience, as someone gets busier, you actually have to be willing to let go of other things in order to grow. It's like a fake shedding of skin. What was that process like for you? How did you know when it was time to get an assistant so that you could grow? What did it take for you to let yourself serve in this bigger way now?
I'm still that yoga teacher. It's really hard for me to know. I wish I knew what it took because I'm still stuck in some old patterns of like not getting as much support as I need. I'd be great to have a business manager or something like that at where I am now.
Yeah.
And I just don't know. I really have trouble delegating. I'm always doing everything myself. And it's really, I don't have a good business mind. It's just everything has, in the beginning it worked because everything just seemed to grow organically. And, but at this point, I could really use someone with a little more business savvy to come in and say, you know, don't do this. You know, it's, you're taking up too much of your time and you're not able to do, you know, to stop doing A, B, C so that you have more time for X, Y, Z. And right. I'm sort of trying to do it all. Like doing that newsletter that you referred to in the intro, that takes a lot of work and time.
Oh, yeah.
It is hugely, because it's got a lot of research in it. And, you know, I've got 8,000 people in my database and only only less than 3,000, somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 actually open it, you know, that newsletter.
So,
totally normal. But the thing is that you work really hard, and then you get people who, if you send out an announcement about Life Force Yoga Practitioner Training I'm doing at the Shivananda Ashram in the Bahamas, and I sent it out yesterday, and if it's not research-related, then you get opt out. You know, it's like
normal.
30 people, it's totally normal.
Totally normal.
It's also like, is that newsletter that I spend so much time doing, should I spend as much time as I do doing it with, you know, people don't want to read all that stuff. I've got like five research studies in it, two or three book reviews. Some people want to read it, but that's the kind of thing.
I'm going to be devil's advocate here. That builds your credibility so beautifully because you're giving great content. I mean, I'll be totally honest with you. I used to read. I'm now in that 70% that I've put your email into a folder. But for like a year or two, I would faithfully open your email and read it.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
For me, it developed a relationship with you because even though you and I haven't talked very often or been, I was like, this woman sends great content. Amy Weintraub, you were one of the people that I loved to get your email and read because there was such great content in it. And now, even though I know it's going into a folder, I still trust you that you're sending great content.
Well, let me just thank you for saying that, and let me just say that the last research newsletter, and they're all archived on my site. They're all under research and news, but the last one has some really exciting research in it.
I'll go find it.
So you might want to take it out of your folder.
I'll search in my email box. And I'm not disagreeing with you that it's something you could delegate to an editor who you supervise, for example.
Exactly.
I totally hear what you're saying. So we should start wrapping up in terms of time. You've been so rich and generous, both in terms of some specific niggling questions that we've gone into and also just the richer, deep piece that you're so articulate on, finding your passion and letting your life journey be what you teach. I love that piece, so thank you on both fronts. Is there anything else you want to say as we close? Anything you've missed? Maybe anything that you've overcome that you're proud of or you've moved ahead? We talked about your chutzpah before we got on the call.
Well, only that I came from a place of passion about what had helped me so much. And then I did, I'm currently doing a lot of research with Brown University and Butler Hospital. I'm a consultant for them for an NIH study on yoga for depression and really doing a lot of research. Did my own research that was published in collaboration with research psychologists. But I don't, as we talked about before the phone call began, I don't have a degree in mental health. And so that is an edge for me. I work, my training is for mental health professionals and yoga teachers. So on my staff, on the faculty, whenever I do a training, there are mental health professionals on the training staff. But it is an edge for me, and so I would say we all have our edges. We all have something that we feel like makes us, quote, we all have those little seeds of not good enough or there's something wrong with me. We all have them, but we don't have to nourish them. And so don't let your what you feel like don't let those constrictions that you or the stories that you tell about yourself about not having enough or the right credentials limit you, because if you're passionate and you get good support, you have a good team that you put together to offer what you offer, or you can refer to someone. If for example, you're talking about the area of mental health, if you have a consultant who is a mental health professional, or you team up with a mental health professional, then, you know, go for it. Go with what your passion is. Don't be limited by not having what you think you need in the outside world, because I certainly don't have it, and I didn't realize I had so much chutzpah, but it did. I'm seeing it now in retrospect.
Yeah, and I love this, Amy, and I'm really glad you wanted to share that, because I just love it to know that we don't have to be perfect. We don't have to have the perfect mm-hmm. credentials, the perfect background. We don't mm-hmm. have to have all our ducks in a row in order to be able to say, this is where I'm called to serve.
Mm-hmm.
I just love
exactly.
that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, thank you so much. A big, deep breath here after all the mm-hmm. lovely life force and joy you've given mm-hmm. us. I just feel your energy so up today and your, mm-hmm. your beautiful presence with us.
Thank you. It's been fun. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. So namaste to you, Amy.
Namaste. And namaste to all the folks and all the beautiful teachers. Let your light
thriving.
Shine. Let your yoga light shine.
Yay, thriving yoga teachers.
Yay.
Namaste, everyone.
Namaste.